Coming up on Terp Weekly Edition, relief from the swine flu may be in store.
We ask how you might trim the budget.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Kara Crawford.
And I'm Matt Butner.
It may not be in the headlines these days, but H1N1, the swine flu virus, is still a serious threat, and there are many students, faculty, and family members of both groups who are still very concerned and looking for help. Terp Weekly Edition's Michael O'Neill tells us that some relief may be in store to help ease those fears.
It has proved to be the epitome of a deadly virus. H1N1, an illness that uniquely targets young people ages 2 to 24. Students, faculty, and parents are looking for something to help combat this lethal sickness that has been called a pandemic and has claimed 127 lives dating back to 2008, according to a swine flu panel discussion that took place last week at STAMP. Help finally may be on the way, thanks to a batch of swine flu vaccines recently released to the health center from the state. One student who received the vaccine said it was something his concerned parents said must be done.
I actually already got one on Monday because my brother got sick with it and my mom insisted that I get it.
Faculty member and child psychiatrist Dr. Michael Brody believes it's important that everyone receive the vaccine. He speaks from experience. Brody suffered a bout of swine flu last summer.
It was absolutely terrible. I was very, very sick, and this is the first time I ever got pneumonia, and I felt that I treated it in a very cavalier manner, which I shouldn't have done, but one. I had it diagnosed with a chest x-ray and a blood test. Taking antibiotics, it cleared up almost immediately. But it has the potential, because it afflicts young people, to become a terrible, terrible disease.
But not everyone is convinced. This student worries about possible side effects.
They came up with it too soon, and I don't feel confident taking it right on the same year that they made it.
Dr. Donald Milton, director of the Maryland Institute for Applied Environmental Health and a professor at the School of Public Health, is confident the vaccine is safe.
The vaccines are made by exactly the same methods that the seasonal vaccine has been made every year for many, many years. And the only difference is that it's got the new virus in it, and that's what you need, is protection against the new virus.
Demand for the vaccine on campus has been high. The health center administered 400 doses last week, 55 in one short span of an hour and a half. Shoba Duncan is a nurse at the health center. She says the staff is working extra hard to ensure that students are vaccinated.
We really have a dedicated staff here that has been working very long hours to administer this H1N1 to our students. A lot of us come in early in the morning and do our work all day, and then we stayed in the evening to do the flu clinic, and it's just extra time that it's taken for all of our staff to do that.
Starting this week, the health center will have a new batch of 1,000 doses of the vaccine ready to administer. The vaccines are free for students and cost $12 for faculty. In College Park, I'm Michael O'Neill for Terp Weekly Edition.
The University View Apartments are raffling a free apartment for the 2010-2011 school year. The grand prize free apartment includes a fully furnished apartment, full-sized washer and dryer in each suite, high-speed internet, basic cable with optional upgrade to DirecTV, telephone ready, and electronic keyed access. Tickets are $20 apiece and can be purchased in the Mitchell Building. Hurry, though, as only 2,500 tickets will be sold.
No immediate bad news to tell you after the latest round of state budget cuts. The Maryland Board of Public Works trimmed another $25 million from the university system. Be taken from cash reserves and for our campus. That means about $10 million from a fund set aside for such an emergency or other one-time expenses. The state faces an expected deficit of $1.5 billion next year, and UMD administrators will need to decide how they'll deal with future budget cuts. But don't worry, President Moat. Terp Weekly Edition's Jennifer Memelo searched all around campus for student suggestions on what they'd gladly go without in lieu of a tuition raise.
Rising tuition costs, student fees, and the sure but steady decline of on-campus housing haven't made for a very friendly relationship between university administrators and students. With the state facing a huge budget crisis next year, the university will almost certainly be forced to cut programs in order to prioritize funding, and the number one affected group will most certainly be students. But administrators take heed. Students have a few very different ideas on what they'd like to see cut from the budget next year.
If I could trim anything from the university's budget, it would be funding for our football team, because we're always losing.
I think a way the university could trim the budget is by not paying people to blow leaves off the sidewalks anymore. It's not that big of a problem, and I don't see why they're out every single day blowing leaves into a pile.
I would get rid of the scooters that all the athletes ride. I don't understand why we have the most apparently fit people on the campus riding around on scooters instead of walking to class like normal people.
I would cut athletics out of the school budget completely. I am an athlete. I understand the benefit of having an athletic program, but it is not good right now here. Secondary leaf floors.
I think the campus shouldn't spend money on the East Campus project when it can't even fund like most of its teachers or professors.
If I could take anything from a university's budget, it'll be to take the university completely online. That's including the Diamondback and all admissions, letters, course documents, and all that stuff should be completely online. It's going to save a lot of paper and printing and resources.
All right, well, firstly, I probably wouldn't have put the money into those new skyboxes in Bird Stadium. I think they were quite unnecessary, but then again, that's my opinion. So.
And there you have it. If some Maryland students get what they want, it looks like we'll be taking the fun out of university funding. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Jennifer Memelo in College Park.
Still to come on Terp Weekly Edition, we'll tell you how students are trying to kick the habit of smoking.
And we'll get you in the holiday spirit and what some people are doing to give back to the needy. Welcome back to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Matt Butner.
And I'm Kara Crawford. Unacceptable. That's how Student Government Association President Steve Glickman describes the state of the UMD campus. In his annual address, Glickman had high praise for his organization and its accomplishments over the past year, but he was full of criticism for the university administration. For all the progress and gains the SGA has made, Glickman said, the state of the campus is unacceptable. His report covered a wide range of topics, but focused on the impact that budget cuts have had on the university community. Most everyone, including President Moat, expect at least one more round of budget cuts, and Glickman worries that this will mean more job losses and the likely elimination of some majors. He called for greater student involvement in the decision-making process. Glickman reviewed some of the major accomplishments from the year, including the America's Greenest Campus title, the Crab Fest, which was a zero-waste event, and increased voter turnout at the College Park elections. One topic he didn't address directly was diversity, specifically the dismissal of Cordell Black, the Associate Provost for Equity and Diversity. But Glickman did mention an upcoming event, a multicultural expo, where groups representing diverse populations will have a chance to promote their organizations.
The University of Maryland and the American Cancer Society observed the annual Great American Smokeout last week. Students on campus gathered to take part in the events designed to help smokers kick the habit. They also took time to pay their respects to those who have died from smoking-related diseases in the past year. Terp Weekly Edition's Caitlin O'Brien has the story.
For smokers of Maryland, last Thursday provided some inspiration and motivation to put down those cigarettes. November 19th marked the annual Great American Smokeout. Students gathered on Hornbeck Plaza to learn more about quitting smoking and to pay respects to those who have died from smoking-related illnesses in the past year. Every year, the American Cancer Society encourages smokers to cut down on the number of cigarettes they smoke or begin a smoking cessation program on the day of the Great American Smokeout. Students at Maryland browsed through different books and learned information about the dangers of smoking and how to quit. Senior history major Elizabeth Case stopped by the demonstrations in between classes.
As a smoker, I think it's great that Maryland has this program or it supports the smokeout. I'm always looking for that date to start. I'm actually sitting here completely sick from my smoking. I have a sore throat. I I'm congested, and I still find myself going outside for cigarette breaks. It's expensive. It's disgusting. My family hates it. If my family knew that I was smoking, they would hate it. And it's a terrible habit, and I always wish I could quit. And I think it's great that Maryland supports this smoke out, because everybody just needs that excuse and that extra push, that extra reason to quit. And I hope that this time it's different, and this time I actually can quit. It would save me money. It would save all that time I spend smoking cigarettes, because smoking cigarettes is even more so than addiction. It's a habit. I find myself, chain smoking just for the sake of sitting outside smoking cigarettes. It's disgusting.
Not only were students encouraged to learn more about quitting, they were also given the chance to reflect on those who have passed away because of smoking. 400 flags were displayed in front of Hornbake Library, with each flag representing 1,000 people who have died from smoking-related illnesses in the last year. For smokers who are interested in quitting, the university has a helpful smoking cessation program. Nicotine replacements, such as gum and patches, acupuncture, and stress management techniques are some of the useful things students can find at the health center if they are interested in quitting. From College Park, I'm Caitlin O'Brien for TERP Weekly Edition.
The SGA rejected a resolution that would ban smoking on the university's campus last week. The debate was about increasing the no-smoking zones in front of residential buildings from 15 feet to 25 feet. Student Government Association members decided that their current policy was not being followed as it was, so it would be a one to ask RAs and university staff to enforce an even stricter rule.
Since our last edition of TERP Weekly Edition, American Indian Solidarity Week was observed. Among the events to mark the occasion, a panel discussion focusing on the range of issues facing Native Americans, including loss of Native lands and discrimination in the form of being wrongfully accused of crimes. TERP Weekly Edition's Josh Naratsky has more.
Indigenous Indians make up only 2% of the population in the United States. However, the issues facing them are still great, as evidenced through a panel titled Indigenous Injustice. This panel was put together by the Office of Multi-Ethnic Student Education in honor of American Indian Solidarity Week. Several speakers discussed the mistreatment of Indigenous Indians. The highlight of the event was a discussion on Leonard Peltier, an American Indian who many believe was wrongly accused of murdering an FBI agent. Michelle Bollinger, a D.C. public schools teacher, spoke out on the Peltier case and the struggle for him to be released from prison.
There's been a movement for his freedom that's existed really since the late 70s and that continues today, that is demanding that the Obama administration take a look at this case. We wanted him to be paroled over the summer. That was denied. However, we do want to fight for clemency.
Bollinger believes that having so few people being aware of the Peltier case creates large-scale problems for American Indians.
The fact that people, that some folks don't know about his case, says a lot about the fact that we are denied our own history. And his case is wrapped up with the history of the American Indian movement and the struggles of Native people, of American Indians, throughout U.S. history. And I think that his story intersects with some really important historical developments that have really hurt people.
The focus then shifted to the discussion of land. Johnson Cerna, a conservation advisor for Indigenous International, spoke about the efforts to protect indigenous land on the Limon Coca Reserve in Ecuador.
We've been protecting our land, the forests, based on our traditional knowledge, in our cultural way, in our traditional way, and we've been facing several problems from protected areas, with oil palm plantation, with oil companies, logging companies. So we have that kind of threats.
One of the issues facing this reserve is that land is being sold to oil companies. Cerna believes that this can be prevented if the companies, as well as the government, took the time to listen to the desires of the Kichwa, the indigenous people living on this land.
First of all, we need to recommend the government to work in their policy in an appropriate way, listening first of all to the communities, because the communities, we have our own plans of development. We understand development in our own way and not as a government, and the government need to understand what we want to do.
In College Park for TERP Weekly Edition, I'm Josh Naratsky.
With Black Friday around the corner, many students will be scrambling to get good deals on Christmas presents for friends and family. What's easy to forget is that there are many children around the world who won't get any presents at all. I asked several people how they hope to solve this problem.
Christmas is on its way, but there are many children in the world who won't be fortunate enough to receive all of the presents and food that we are. Operation Christmas Child is an organization that hopes to change that. Student organizations and communities like Maryland Christian Fellowship and the University View have teamed up with Operation Christmas Child in an effort to send shoeboxes full of useful items to needy children all over the world. So what exactly goes in these boxes? Computer science major Doug Hummel attends Maryland Christian Fellowship as well as resides in the View. He explains what he placed in each of the two boxes he filled.
I tried to hit everything that was on the list in the flyers that they handed out for the program. There was hygiene items like toothpaste and toothbrushes, and there were certain kinds of toys, clothing like hats and like berets and stuff for girls, and then just some other, like some hard candy kind of stuff to go along with the toothpaste, you know?
Between the two boxes, Hummel spent about $60. The gift was generous, but he explains why he thinks it's so important.
There's a lot of people around the world who are less fortunate than us, and I know that I personally have a lot more than I need or could really use, so I'm happy to give it away to people who need it more. And, you know, that's just something that's been becoming a lot more apparent to me over the past year.
Suzanne Howard is the coordinator for this event at The View, and she tells us what happens with the boxes.
The boxes are sent to third world countries, so I'll drop them off at a local drop place. Actually, tomorrow, it ends today for us. I'll drop those off there. There's an option online to track the box, so you can see what child receives it or what part of the world it goes to. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do that for our residents yet. I have to look into it a little bit more. But the boxes are then sent overseas. The $7 in each box covers the shipping and handling, as well as a partial donation to the organization that runs Operation Christmas Child. And then basically, you know, they deliver these boxes to needy children throughout third world countries.
Howard explains why The View got involved in the project and how they promoted it.
Each individual resident could kind of adopt a child and create a gift just for them and send it across. So it was easy for our residents to do individually. It was easy on our end, management-wise, to organize it and offer it. We got shoeboxes donated from a couple of the shoe stores in the area, and so we offered those if people needed a shoebox. They sent us posters and literature to give out, which we did to promote it, and we have posted throughout the building.
Howard also talked about an additional element that could be added to the shoeboxes.
In the box, you have an option to write a letter or leave a personal note, which I think in the religious community, a lot of people do choose to, you know, add their religious touch to it. But for our community, we're not really encouraging that at all. We're more so just asking for the donation of hygiene products, school supplies, or toys for a child, a needy child in a third world country.
The option to place a personal touch to the gift also creates the possibility of receiving a letter back from the child. But whether you decide to write one or not, your gift will certainly touch someone's life. The final deadline to get these gifts in is November 23rd. For more information on filling a shoebox or making a donation, visit www.samaritanspurse.org. In College Park, for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Butner.
That's it for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Kara Crawford.
I'm Matt Butner. Don't forget, you can take us with you. Visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.